Hi, I'm Keegan, and this is A Bunch of Gamers. This is our 153rd episode of Werewolf the Apocalypse 20th Anniversary Edition, The Other Side. I'm going to go around and have my players introduce themselves.
I'm Tyler, and I play Kyle, also known as Guards of the Low. He's a Philodox of the Children of Gaia.
Hi, I'm Sam. I play Cora. She's an Aruna in the Geta Fenris.
Hi, I'm Adam. I play Mark Guides the Fallen, and he's a Thurge of the Children of Gaia.
Hi, I'm Sean. I play Zeb, speaks in sweet whispers. He is a Thurge of the Silent Striders.
Last time, the Pax had ended up in Vancouver, Washington, after discovering that Alvin Stormchaser was in fact Carson Faces the Storm. They then went to the Sept of the Unified Heart to speak with the elders there and get a pulse of how the Unified Heart would vote in the coming Concordant to deal with the child. The Pax then found Regender Final Days, speaking with him about why he had turned on them, claiming that he had convinced some of the Protectors that he would vote for the death of the child, in turn that they would vote to keep the two Pax alive. They now stand in awkward silence. Final Days takes a deep breath, looks you all over, and kind of goes, "Will that be all?"
Not quite. I'll admit I was a lot angrier when I first heard that you hadn't called for it, the Concordant, but thank you for doing what you've done. However, I am going to be brutally honest with you because I think you deserve it. And this is honesty that I will not visit upon any other of the Garu I speak to. There is no world in which this child dies and I remain with the nation, alive or otherwise. I have spent years now fighting for what I believed in, but I spent years beforehand following, and I don't agree with everything that happened when I was following, and those things often happened because I was following. So if the nation rejects me here as a leader, as someone who can push us forward, then there will be nothing left for me here. This was my purpose, and it won't be my purpose any longer if I can't save one life.
If that is how you feel, I understand. And I'm sorry if I hurt you while you followed me. But I also think, and I don't mean to sound condescending, but I'm sure it will, that as long as you're alive, you'll find your way back to the true path, even if you can't forgive me initially.
I can't believe in a path that leads to us slaughtering innocent children. I can't believe in a nation that can't, even in its last moments, choose anything of peace.
Peace is forged in blood, and if it's a lasting peace, I'll forge it with my own claws. But I know that we won't see eye to eye.
No, I suppose not. For me, it's the difference between serving Gaia and serving the Garu Nation, a distinction that I did not see until recently.
Good luck on your travels.
Thank you, Regender.
Zeb, there is a Silent Strider here.
Do I know them?
You do. It is a Tori Sands of the Stream, who you met at the large Silent Strider moot a few years ago.
All right. I will go and find her.
And you find her. She's in the bawn.
On the move soon, kin?
Yes. There's been much news, and there's some for you as well.
Oh. Well, please, Ryo.
There's a young Silent Strider named Dreams of the Wheel. As Sands of the Stream steps up and whispers in your ear, she has made contact with our ancestors. She can speak and channel them.
Zeb will look visibly shocked. Isn't that heresy? And he'll whisper back, obviously.
Some say that Set's prison is breaking. Others say that she gained the power by speaking to Wapuet in the ancestral homelands in a spirit journey. The old undying came out and performed a rite that allowed her to see the ancestors that have been hidden from us for so long.
Are there others that are flocking to her now?
Some, yes. Some are coming to her with the potential to see ancestors as well. They're all Kleoth, the young, the next generation. Many are wondering if it'd be prudent to kill the child and use its blood and chem to strengthen the bonds of Set's prison.
Where do you stand on this? If I ask a personal question.
There might be merit to it. Only because the blood of the impossible to lock away Set would be important. I've heard now that some who travel with the Adi have been able to enter Chem unmolested by the nightmares. Set's curse is dissolving. And if Set's curse is dissolving, that likely means that the prison that allowed the curse to come to fruition is also dissolving.
And we wouldn't be able to gather enough allies to defeat him in battle.
It took the tribe united and having a homeland.
Yes.
The tribe is divided and across the world.
I'll relate to her very briefly what we saw, with the bottom line being that everything was ambiguous. Nothing was set. It was all a matter of conviction. Every answer was a variation on the same. How dedicated are you to Gaia? What are you willing to do? What should be done? And, you know, seeing one nurture it, another play with the child, others ambivalent.
I understand the desire to protect the child in this case, but this prophecy, in my mind, asks too much of some guru, because it's asking us to treat one of the warborn as just another guru. Imagine trying to get the Fianna to side with that. Or a Red Talon. Or a Shadow Lord. Or even a Silver Fang. It feels like that path leads to folly.
You presented something I never thought was going to be possible. And I do hate Set. He'll spit. I hate all of them for what they've done and what they've taken from us. I can't believe this is it. This is the test. I refuse to. But if my brothers and sisters find, well, if they align with this, then very well. I hope they have access to their ancestors. I hope they can go home. I would die for that.
If you can convince others, I'm sure that your path is a righteous one. But this world has thrown so much at me, I find it difficult to hope that anyone can do the right thing.
Is there one among us that is particularly difficult to deal with? I've had enough time with our allies. That isn't going to be what swings a vote in our favor. Someone that's a stalwart, someone that's dug in.
As I said, think of the traditionalists. The Fianna. How seriously they sing of the litany, especially the first tenet.
I meant among us, but...
Oh, I see. Among us, there's most are more... waffling, I should say. Though I have heard that Endless Journey and Winds of the Ashen Dead have been more in line with the potential of killing the child. I think Winds of the Ashen Dead has grown cynical in his old age. And, well, I think Endless Journey is feeling something else. They are of the Warborn as well, and I think that they see the wellspring of hope in the others. And because of that, they reject it outright. They feel that their lot, the Warborn, the Krynosborn, is hopeless, and that this false hope will shatter them and bring about more pain.
Neither one of them's entirely wrong. I'll take your advice to heart. I have two things for you, especially should it come to pass that I am executed. The first one is, for Winds of the Ashen Dead, he's been onto something for some time, information that he's been trying to track down, and there's a reason why he can't. He needs to keep digging. If I find him, I'll give him more details verbally, but it's important enough that he shouldn't stop, and he'll know what I'm referring to. The second one that I have a question on, the Margrave here. Have we as a tribe considered choosing a side?
Margrave has always been a staunch political opponent to King Albrecht, though Albrecht draws ire from even his own tribe, which suggests at least that he's either completely a fool or he's onto something. Falcon gave him the ability to use the Silver Crown, and so I doubt that the complete fool option is is his nature. I think Albrecht is right, and I think Albrecht is going to let the Concordant play out the way it does, regardless of his feelings on the child, simply because he wants the nation to choose its own path. He doesn't believe that dictating it will do the right thing. That if he dictates that the child survives, that the Garu will grow resentful, and that they'll chafe because he will be pushing them, not leading them.
Well, fair play to both of them. Thank you for the information. And shocking. Is there anything else you wish me to take on with me to pass along?
I have heard one other rumor that does not play to our tribe that you should know about. I've heard that the Sept of the Winding Way has been attacked by strange worm spawn. It seems many are like leeches of some variant, but they have just these odd new powers. They're creatures that are decaying, shambling. They rise from the earth, rotted.
There's always more, isn't there?
Always more.
Well, Kin, should I fall, I hope one day I do meet you in Kem. Until then.
Until then, find the oasis, find the old tombs, and may our dead finally guide our ways, and that you join them so that you may teach the next generation.
Thank you, Kin. Rhea.
You head back to everyone else?
I think we need to find some hardliners, y'all. We've been taking the easy route so far. Persuading folks, I think, that already back us. If we just pushed hard enough, there might be some folks that we have to push a little bit harder.
I'm sure there's a lot of them, though we've really just been going to people that we know because we know of them, and I guess we want their opinion and to see if we can convince them. Is there anyone that you know for certain would be against us that we need to speak with?
I mean, for certain, no. It's those that already don't like the Krenos, you know, the Krenosborn, the Fianna, portions of the Silver Fangs. But we've talked to a few Silver Fangs. The Fianna will definitely be a bulwark.
We could head to the Hidden Glade in Boston. We didn't spend much time there, but we spent some, and it is a Fianna sept.
It's as good a place as any, I guess.
That's the only thing I could think of. Well, right off the bat, I'm sure more will come to mind. The Judges of Doom among the Shadow Lords, or might be another. That's its own terrifying possibility of speaking to them.
Incredibly terrifying.
Keegan, how far away is Electric Peak from here? I know Wyoming is not necessarily close to Washington.
Yes. Pretty far. According to Google, about 965 miles.
Did you want the PAX to go to Electric Peak for a reason, Tyler?
The reasoning is that that is a Shadow Lord sept. I don't know if they have anything in particular with the Judges of Doom. Tyler
there is
doesn't.
A judge
Kyle
of,
might.
There's a Judge of Doom there.
And they also, although we have been there, their view of our pack is mixed.
Right.
And has been mixed for quite some time. So it is not an allied sept, I suppose you could say.
I think that's a good idea. There and then onward to the Hidden Glade. At least it engages some more hardcore members of the nation. Gives us a taste of what we'd be up against. To that point, maybe we try to force a meetup with Appleton and some of her people along the way.
That could work. We could also speak with the gatekeeper to see if they have anything in Wyoming as well.
I was willing to have my trusty Arun look it up on his device to see where there's a truck stop, perhaps, along the way that would afford a meeting. not too close to where we want to go. But yeah, the gatekeeper, we could always just choose, you know, distance ourselves from there. But what do you think? Would we want to meet them along the way, or try to meet her along the way, or go to where we want to go and then figure it out from there?
She could very well just find us without us knowing.
She could.
My whole thought of it was just finding the closest sept we could take a moon bridge to, and then meeting halfway between that sept and Electric Peaks.
Yeah, okay.
And if there's none, then we run. And halfway between here and there.
You do have access to another cairn that's closer. It's in southern, or it's south of Electric Peaks specifically. It is the Snake River Cairn. It is a child of Gaia Cairn between the Snake and Yellowstone Rivers right on the Continental Divide.
If we want to try to get in contact with Appleton, do we want to do that and give us some time, wait till we get there?
We could look up on the map, see somewhere we could meet, and set it in 2 days, travel there, speak to everyone, and start heading to that place.
Yeah. I have an incredibly stupid idea to try to figure out how to get in contact with them.
Oh.
What's on your mind?
I would recommend that we would call the last place of her employment and ask for her. And if she is not there, ask if they have a forwarding number. And if they don't, just say, we have a significant problem with mages in our area. You need to meet us here in 2 days. Bye. And see who they send.
Certainly barges down the doors of communication there, definitely.
My assumption is they have more money, more resources, and more people to throw at problems than we do. Could be wrong.
At the very least, I'm sure they have cars.
Yes! And credit. Shall we attempt this, or wait?
Best to try earlier, right?
Right.
Might have to try again later.
Right. Yeah. Keegan, we would attempt to do this not at the cairn, and a ways away from it, prior to us going through the movement, so get away from there, and have our Glasswalker friend use his resources as appropriate for an outside line that we could terminate after we make the call.
Perfect. So you actually had, you had a good ways out, leaving the National Forest and heading to one of the small towns that surround it, and find a library with public phones. Doing that, you get a hold of the phone. Requires remarkably little resources in Williams Park, which is probably for the best.
Right.
Okay, as you get the phone, and you find the Boulder office of DNA.
And I will dial said number.
Hi, you've called DNA. We are experiencing higher than average call volumes right now. If this is about therapy, please press 1. If this is about a new patient, please press 2. If this is to contact a patient, please press 3. If this is about an inquiry on treatment and finding a professional, please press 4. For all others, please press 5 and stay on the line.
I will press 4.
As it redirects, as you hear the call and then kind of the hold music, you're staying there for like 15, 20 minutes with,
your call is important to us. Please hang on the line
every 3 minutes until finally here. This is DNA. My name is Cheryl. How can I help you?
Hi, Cheryl. My name is Jebediah Fess. I am trying to find a contact that I was given for a provider named Dr. Appleton. I have old contact information for her, but I wanted to try to link through up through the call relay here for referral providers.
Sure thing. Can you hold for just another moment?
I can.
Music once again. As you finally hear, click. You said Dr. Appleton?
Yes, and I know that she's been making quite a few academic movements. I'm not sure if I have the right information that's been tracked down, but that's who I have the contact information for. Yes.
Okay, and when did you get this contact information, sir?
Maybe a year ago, a little less. You know, things move slowly in the healthcare sector.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking here. It looks like Dr. Appleton has been away from the company for some time.
Oh, shucks. Did she leave forwarding contact information at all, or a place that I could call to leave a message for another her new practice?
I'm sorry, sir. She was set off as a missing person.
Oh man, that's terrible. I didn't hear about that in the news. Was that anything I can look up and check?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Holy crackers, I'm sorry to hear about that. Well, does she have a colleague that was working in the office that maybe I could talk to?
There's several, sir, but Mick, can I ask your name once again?
Yes, Jebediah Fess, F-E-S-S.
Right, yes. Oh, I see, yes, of course. Jebediah Fess. Okay, thank you, Mr. Jebediah. And so, Mr. Fess, next question, I'm sorry. Kind of more standard procedures here. Where are you calling from?
The edge of the frontier. Arizona, of course.
Arizona. Thank you. Arizona, as you hear her typing away. And she goes, okay, Arizona. Wow. Okay.
Zeb will, like, put his hand over the receiver real quick to kind of point at William and be like, accident for Appleton. Look it up.
Oh, yes, of course. And, do you plan on coming out this way? What were you looking for Miss Appleton for? If you don't mind me asking, of course.
Oh, sure. Okay, guys, out of character. Do I close with the strong closure and we move out? Or do we kind of make something up and roll this way? This certainly affects the rest of the player characters here for me being this stupid, so...
So I can't tell whether or not she's kind of displaying like Appleton isn't part of the company anymore or not. But if she is playing at it, like, hey, Dr. Appleton, maybe something like Dr. Appleton tried to help a couple of my friends. They weren't super responsive, but I'm really, really needing help. And I'd like to talk to her about my condition.
So you want to play it more like a real person. All right.
Yeah. Well, cause she, when she had trapped, or imprisoned Mark and Cora, she was, I don't know if she was really like believing it or not, but like she was talking to us, like she was trying to help us overcome being a Garu, and right. It was an illness.
That's exactly what it was.
So you want me to leave this on for a little longer versus just send your fucking people to where I need them? Thank you very much.
If we want Appleton and she's playing at her not being at the company anymore, then right. I feel like that might be a good way to go about it. If Appleton truly isn't at the company anymore, then if we just say, hey, send your people, we don't know who's going to be showing up.
I mean, it might not matter, but yeah.
That's true.
Maybe
that's
we
just
can,
my thought on it.
Maybe we can do, like, I don't know, play on, like, former patients asking for a follow-up. Mark Bishop and Cora, insert last name here.
Oh, I don't want to risk putting your real names out there. So
that is true, question. Yeah.
Is there a perception William, empathy that I... Oh, go ahead.
Real quick. Yep. William holds up his phone. It's something from a local Boulder newspaper, and... Yeah, the Appleton is listed as a missing person. And then, Kyle, it clicks into your mind, thanks to your eidetic memory, that several Garu from Steel Mountain and a few children of Gaia attempted to go after Appleton, and they all disappeared along with her. The dates match up to what's in your mind.
Kyle will relay all of that. As for Tyler... I was thinking that we had a conversation with her and I don't remember his name, her boss, I guess, in the cyber realm, where there was some implication that like maybe there would be more discussion in the future. And I think it might make sense to reference that moment indirectly just to see if something actually does pan out there, because by referencing that, whoever we're talking to asks her about it, she might actually be interested in speaking with us. Because if she does have that, then we kind of get that in. If she doesn't, then we've given her no extra information in any capacity.
This presupposes that Appleton becomes unmissing and shows back up to work.
It presupposes that this person is in the know in some way.
Right.
Or they aren't. And if they aren't, then we don't give this company any information about us.
Keegan, can I do a perception roll to see if they're leading me on, if this person's legit, like what I might be dealing with here?
So yes, you can. That is going to be a perception empathy. So we'll make that diff 7.
Okay. All right. So let's see this first. I have 2 successes. I don't know if Dice Maiden populated on your end or not.
Yes. Okay. So it seems that she is genuinely confused as to why you're calling for Appleton, but she does seem to be wanting to keep you on the phone line a bit longer. Like, she seems to be leading you on keeping you on the phone line.
All right. So Zeb can kind of make that notion that he feels like he's being led on. Kind of puts his hand across his neck like maybe it's time to wrap it up. Out of character. Do I still try to milk this thing or just hit him with the punch and get off the damn phone before they track down to where we're at? I'm okay with being in a place that's not here.
I'm just worried whoever shows up to that will have nothing to do with Appleton and everything to do with fucking over Garu. Because we could... I think regardless, people will show up to that. especially dropping something like that, because they know all of, like, if we say Major's like, oh, these people are under delusions, for sure we gotta get to them, they could be dangerous. Mm-hmm. And they're calling about ex-employees.
What I'm inclined to say is I have friends that have undergone treatment, to Sam's point, which is a very good one, same with Adam. I have friends that have received treatment from them that did not work. My concern is about another that definitely needs treatment and has begun harming others in a very significant way. And I will be at whatever location, because I'm afraid of them, to come and be met. And if I sound schizophrenic, fine. At worst, they just think I'm a crank. Would that be enough, do you think, to set the hook?
I think it would.
I think you should mention Appleton again. Just say, like, I had spoken with Dr. Appleton once.
Okay. All right, yeah.
Which is why I wanted to speak to her specifically.
Right, okay. Do I mention other people that have had treatment still?
I think the rest of that was solid.
Okay. All right. And I, you know, as he's kind of hemming and hawing, oh my god, I just saw the article about what happened to her. That's terrible. Well, look, like, I had spoken to her previously, and I had some friends that had also undergone treatment with her, but they didn't respond very well. I was really hoping again to talk to her face to face about it, and I know that she had a supervisor too that was like super interested in it, but like, look, I have another friend undergoing some pretty weird stuff. Some weird stuff's been happening to them. They're really freaking me out. I've been super avoiding them, and right now I will be at blank location in this amount of time, as I basically had to get everything I own to get the hell out of there.
Okay, sir, thank you. Thank you for that information. Can I, so you said you're gonna be you're in Arizona? What state did you say the location's gonna be in?
So equidistant from Electric Peak, or outside of Electric Peak, so where would we want that I mean,
Electric Peak is in southern Montana, almost right on the Wyoming border.
Right.
And so, and you said Arizona is where you were at.
I was, to buy time. And I can make this math worth in a second. We weren't trying to go directly to Electric Peak, though. It was, if we were going to go to that Child of Gaia cairn first.
Snake River cairn.
To the Snake River cairn. Okay, so really, if I just said center mass Arizona to Wyoming, it's still 900 miles.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so I will, and we were going to talk about a place that is not near there. So southern Wyoming would be a truck stop on the route in, you know, southern Wyoming, or even...
Ooh, I know of a town, Laramie, Wyoming.
Right. I mean, obviously we're coming from Washington, so this is a whole different thing, yeah. Right? But this is about the plausibility that Zeb's going to use Silent Strider powers to get us somewhere, and that it's not going to, like, make them think how the hell he's going to make this journey. So we will pick a place, probably, we could do Idaho or Wyoming, a truck stop in Idaho that we would pass by on the way to Wyoming or double back to. Would that work, do you think, security wise? We go to Wyoming and we move back toward the Idaho border.
Okay, like a fallback point.
We would just stay away from any other cairn, right? So it would just look, yeah, like, you know, it would just like me, you know, crazy Jebediah just drove straight north across Utah.
That sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So working with William and zooming in on his device to find a truck stop really kind of on the border between Wyoming and Idaho, Keegan.
Okay, you find the Mudslider truck stop.
Okay. I will mention that location. And I'm basically going to just do a bunch of PCP and drive all night. So see you guys when I see you guys.
Wait, sir. Click. You take a deep breath. The phone you were just on starts ringing.
Well, does someone want to pick up to mess with them, or are we just going to get the hell out of here?
I don't know. I don't have any. Yeah. With an ending like that, how can I follow up?
As you start walking out, you hear cell phones near you going off almost systematically.
I think they know where we are.
Yeah, let's bounce.
And then William's phone starts going off.
Sorry, William.
As he clicks it open and his eyes widen, he goes, Zeb, you're going to want to hear this.
All right, he'll pick it up.
This is Jillian Ann Appleton.
Dr. Appleton, I would say it's a pleasure, but it's more terrifying.
Calling my old job. They didn't even know I'm still alive. Don't worry, though. I'm sure if I know exactly what you are, you would be put to sleep very quickly and sent to a great place to try and deal with your condition. They might even be able to find it, though I think I'm more on the cutting edge these days.
As monstrous as I find your entire outlook, there is something truly terrible that's happening that I believe you would like to put a stop to. There is an individual. Is this secure? I'm assuming that if you found me like this, that this is secure for us to speak.
As secure as you want, yes. Don't worry. We have the best technology possible. I have it on good authority that the iterators had made sure that my phone is secure.
Well, there's an individual that's been operating within Colorado, as far as I know, for some time. This individual has been conducting experiments on people that used to be dead, and they're coming back to life. They call themselves the Good Doctor, and they've been running a laboratory for some time. It's a significant problem.
I'd say, give me a moment, please. Are you sure? The Good Doctor? So you've seen them?
I have a name. Well, I've seen them to a degree. A friend of mine saw them, but their face was obscured. They weren't able to make them out. Another friend of mine, we have another name. I do not know if they're associated. That name of that individual is Edgar Martin, pudgy-faced looking fellow.
The Good Doctor's been on our radar for a couple decades.
He's interfering with us, and he's bringing some of us that used to be dead back. And I feel like that'd be a significant problem for you, as much as it would be to find the cure for what you think we suffer from. The cure from one of us dead that's now alive again would be probably an equal or even more challenging problem to you. It's pervasive and bad.
This is good. You told that poor receptionist that your name was Jebediah? Is this your real name?
Yeah, because, yes it is. Absolutely. 100%. Okay.
Your sarcasm is cutting. Have you thought about wielding a scalpel? Anyway.
If you're good enough to find me like this, you're good enough to find me. I'll retain whatever anonymity I still have. Thank you. Jebediah's good enough.
All right, Jebediah. Well, we can try and find the Good Doctor, though I know that they have some powerful defenses. They've stopped us before.
They aren't just messing with us. They are targeting regular everyday people, too.
That is within their nature, from what I'm told.
Can you tell me any way that we can keep them at bay or protect ourselves from them?
Yes. Run.
I was afraid you might say that.
The issue is that I have gained some scientific understanding. This good doctor is a reality deviant that has powers that put some of the upper circle uneasy. And I won't go into too many details, but if the good doctor is still around, it might mean that they might be one of the most powerful of their kind left on Earth.
Well, be advised that his reach and his grasp have grown significantly, and his meddling is problematic. I think you already understand that. We have a shared understanding, but I wanted to provide the warning for you anyway. There's something even more terrible out there now. And his blatancy seems to have increased.
You hear kind of a robotic, like, you know those kind of like voice modulated kind of voices?
Mm-hmm.
Blatant, please. I've always thought of myself as someone who took all the precaution in the world.
Good luck, Jill. And then we'll run, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And not directly to the Sept.
No.
No. Just away.
And maybe, I mean, that's a SIM card removal.
Yeah.
For now, we can put it back in after. Later.
Yeah.
Poor William.
Poor William's phone. Poor William.
Poor William. And so, you guys kind of rush out. You do back and forth, making sure that no one's following you. You basically take a day to get back to the Sept just to, you know, cover your ass as you get back and approach the gatekeeper. So, where are you guys heading?
We were thinking of Snake River.
All right. I know that they're pretty friendly to the child, so it might be a good place to build up morale. So, good luck as she calls upon the spirit of the Karen as the moon bridge shoots off into the heavens. You also all take one lethal damage because you have to step sideways.
Of course.
And you launch off. As you land in the Karen, you are met by several children of Gaia. Kyle, could I get a charisma etiquette, please, to kind of just do the social niceties?
Absolutely. Standard cool. Diff?
Yes. Actually, diff 5 because this Karen's pretty friendly to you. All right. You hit it off great with the elders of the Karen. They're all in your corner, sort of thing. Like, maybe one or two were on the fence, but this small Karen is pretty much on your side for the Concordant.
Wonderful news.
So if you want to head from this Karen to Electric Peak, that is about a 2-day journey on foot. And that's a hard run, so you'll need to do a stamina roll.
Take it, we're all in lupus form for this.
Yes.
I'm okay with that.
All right. So it is a hard forced march run, and that means that it is a stamina athletics roll. Difficulty 8 for everyone except Mark, because Mark's got that punctured lung. So it's diff 9.
Oof.
Keegan, I'm going to activate my airfoot anklets.
Okay.
The gnosis rating of the fetish, forgive me, I haven't had a fetish in a very long time, is the difficulty, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And what does that fetish do?
It will I cease to leave even half the normal footprints, and anything tracking my scent or disturbance is +2 difficulty. Stealth throws are improved, but the other part of it is stamina involving long distance running becomes easier by -2 difficulty.
Oh, nice. All right, you all succeed as you finally lop into the range of Electric Peak.
I'll give off a very polite howl of greeting.
Give the howl of greeting, and you are approached by Unmoving Night. Well, this is impressive. Welcome again. It has been some time.
It is an honor to see you again, Unmoving Knight Rhea.
Indeed.
How are you?
Concerned, the Karen continues to grow weak and we continue to fight for it. But that is how things are. We cannot change these circumstances. Why are you here?
We are traveling to many Septs. and we do so to speak of the child and the concordant that is coming.
I see. That makes some sense. Very well, then. I will bring you into the Cairn, as I'm sure you will wish to speak to the Elder.
Thank you. Yes.
Owls of Fear is there. You see them kind of look you over. It's been some time. Not since I've been, was brought to your Cairn about litany violations, and now again, litany violations will bring me to speak on you again, but before the whole nation.
And thank you for the services you provided to Sacred Stone.
It was my duty.
And as you could guess, we have come to speak about the Concordant and the child.
He simply nods.
And if you are willing to give it, I would like to hear your impressions, your perceptions, because most of the people we have spoken to so far are children of Gaia. People who would, well, like to believe us.
Very well. You have come here and you have shown bravery, so I will give you the honest truth. Violations of the litany can bring no victory for the Garu or Gaia. I feel that the Desperate One prophecy is not ambiguous. He will violate all the tenets of litany and be victorious, which means that he will let humanity know. He will eat the flesh of man. He will allow a Cairn to be violated. These are the things of a monster, and one that cannot be allowed to live, especially one who would be victorious in the apocalypse. We know who. I feel that you have let your compassion lead you astray, and in some ways it is admirable to love all of Gaia's creatures. And in some ways, even, I do agree with the readings of Litany that it is not the child who must be punished for the violation of the first law, but the parents. But this child will violate even that. It might create even more demon progeny and sweep this world in darkness.
I appreciate how forthcoming you were. Thank you. There are a great many prophecies that are spoken of when this child is mentioned, and the Desperate One is surely at the forefront of that. There's no question. And I agree with your reading on the first law, but I do not know when this prophecy was, but I do not know when this prophecy was foreseen, what that prophet's thoughts on that first law were. I have no way of knowing that. If they thought otherwise, that to be born was the sin in and of itself, they might call it this way. But I am not going to pretend that I have not violated the litany in the past, but I burned an Erebus for those crimes. And I can't say what this child might do. I can't, because none of us can. But I have difficulty judging someone as guilty before they have committed a single crime.
Its guilt is in the streams of the future, that much is true. But there are other signs. It was born according to the prophets of the Protectors, which I am a member of, and thus have heard it from the prophet's mouth, that a child that should not exist be born under a bleeding sky. Blood-red star opens, and the child's cries are heard. Now, I can understand how someone might think that the child has been born as a response to this, but while the Krynos born are not guilty in and of themselves, I do believe that the Krynos born are spiritually weaker than the Hamid or the Lupus. The first Ronin was the first of the Krynos born, and they fell to the worm because they were seen with scorn, and that is a lesson for the Garu to not constantly shun and bring down our Krynos born. That is one of the lessons. But there is another lesson in the subtlety of the storytelling that many miss. Rat's children have always crawled on their bellies. They have been the children of jackals. They are the lowest of the low, and they always have been. The Omega Wolves who crunch into the bones to feast on the marrow because the choicest meats are gone. None of us in our tales fell to the Great Destroyer before the first Ronin. Its spiritual weakness from the sin of its conception allowed that to happen. And because of it, it opened the door for the worm to enter Guru hearts and thus bring about corruption. If this child is born from two such corrupt individuals, how much more is the corruption? How much deeper does it go? What if its deformity is not physical, but spiritual, and its spiritual corruption is doubly that of any other of its breed?
I would only present to you one thing that we saw, to be interpreted as you see fit, certainly, for I honor and value what the protectors of Gaia have done. I saw Ishtara herself pick up that child, hold it close, and show it love. It served as a sign to me to at least question what my initial thought was. Everything else has been a matter of conviction. Everyone else we've ever spoken to, it's been the same thing over and over again. This is a test. I think to shy away from this test is what presents weakness to us. I can think only of the epic of the gate Thunder Rage of the Shadow Lords, when he felt the unwritten code enter his heart that changed a killer into a warrior. I believe there is the chance for this child to receive the same through being raised properly by the most devoted amongst us in the nation.
Now that is an interesting philosophical theory, and one that perhaps could be worked. Spiritual corruption can take time, and it can be subtle. Now, your choice of Ishtara is interesting, for she is but an aspect of the mother, and the mother is both love and violence, but Ishtara certainly embodies the love aspect more, and may wish to see the better of our angels, so to speak, as I'd heard distantly in my childhood. But to think that we could turn a killer into a hero, well, that presents an interesting challenge, as you very well know of Black-Eared Longtooth, the Black Spiral Dancer, who was thrown to the rivers of Erebus and sits there to this day, decades upon decades, constantly ebbing in and out towards the island as they are caught in their torturous visions and inability to be redeemed. Now, is the child like the Shadow Lord of legend, or is the child like the very real Spiral sitting within the rivers of molten silver? Now, I am not a cruel Garu. It is not within the litany to do cruelty. Cruelty is of the worm, and if this child is innocent now and destined to be corrupt later, I think it may be a mercy to kill it while it is innocent so that its soul remains untarnished and may be able to pass into some ancestral homeland with a bit of peace before the end drives all into darkness. And on the other side, if the child is potentially redeemable, I do not believe it is equipped to be thrown into Erebus to be purified, to be a champion. That is a cruelty that I would not be able to live with myself. So, now we question, should we raise this child to have the mental fortitude to survive Erebus? But on the flip side, if we give them strong mental fortitude, will it be strong enough to hide its taint until it is far too late and it never makes it to Erebus? You see the constant spirals in my mind of thinking which way is best and what is mercy and what is cruelty, because these are important things for any judge of doom and any philodox. Though I am a rune, I have taken on many philodox roles for my Karen in my camp.
I think that many who have fallen to the worm, many that I have been alive to see, have fallen for two reasons. The first is because they were surrounded by it. They were born into it. They were captured and forced into it. Ones who have entered hives and never come out. Not the same Garu, at least. But the other, the one that we have control over are the ones that we failed to teach, the ones that we failed to show compassion, the ones that we failed to show strength. The Garu have spent centuries now failing to keep our own from the worm. And I think it's an interesting point you raised of the first Ronin, that perhaps allowed corruption to spread into us, that it opened the door. But we must take responsibility now for what has continued since then. And some of that is a lack of compassion, a lack of ability to see what something might be. And I don't just mean, will this be of the worm, but will this be of Gaia? You will see the child yourself in just a few months. So of course you can verify this when you are there. But there is not yet any corruption in it. The test that Zeb refers to could very easily just be, are we capable of showing enough compassion, but still enough discipline, to right the wrongs of the first Ronin?
That is an interesting point, and one I will take into consideration, but I want you to take another one into your own consideration, because how you react here and now will determine how I vote regarding you and your packs, as these are also important questions to see that you have acted within the litany, even if you were led astray, because that would mean the difference between a punishment rite and a normal punishment rite, such as the Stone of Scorn, or another punishment rite like Gaia's Vengeful Teeth, based on your actions. So, you have spoken on how some Garu fall because they are raised in it, or they are consumed into it, or they are forced into it. What if the prophecy is not about how we act, but about the inevitability of fate, which, as we know, is tangible and real, as we have seen with the prophecies of Phoenix, and we have seen with so many prophecies before, that the child, even if we raise justly, even if we raise correctly, even if we give them a strength and a fortitude of spirit, ends up in a cairn that is raided, that is destroyed, and that the child is taken to the heart of a hive and forced to march to become the Dark Champion, which makes it all the more tragic and, more importantly, in line with Garu history, in that we had done all the right things and still we had failed, and we had now created a just champion who sees their fall and their pain right before their breaking. And is that cruelty?
I would revisit one piece of this and give you my very clear answer, Elder. There's just a risk, there's just a higher risk of zealots coddling and worshiping this child, as there would be to the unnecessary cruelty to break its spirit and turn it toward the worm. Either is bad. We have committed ourselves time and again, all of us have the scars to show it, of a battle of impossible odds. At any given time, the worm might strike. At any given time, it would be struck from Gaia's face, with most of you deservedly entering your ancestral homelands to see your fellows, your comrades, and your heroes. The loss is exceptional. I won't judge this child any differently than any other Garu that would have the same fate. It is the intolerable cruelty and the disgustingness of the worm, and the reason why we must fight it always, wherever it dwells, wherever it breeds. Because just as much as it whispers honey in our ears and it injects venom into our bodies and twists us and breaks us, every time there's a risk. We can't fight the worm without risk. We can't stand against the forces of darkness without risk. At this point, many of whom I've heard, it's all about just offsetting the risk. The instant yes for the possible no. We've never lived that way. We certainly don't lead that way. And I would hope that I would be judged as a failure of an alpha if every time I looked at my pack and said, well, this could happen to you. Probably not worth the fight. Probably not worth standing up for to do what needs to be done. Probably not worth the risk.
That may be true, but once again, we have to go back to the core element of the argument. And the core element is fate. Fate has deemed this child for greatness, even without the prophecies. And if there were no prophecies, I would be very much in your camp. But how I see it is, at least from the prophecies I've heard, and you can correct me if I am wrong, if we kill the child, we guarantee that the worm does not get a champion, and that we don't get a champion to some degree, but we guarantee that the supposed fall in some of the prophecies does not happen. One cannot come back from death. In the second option, we do redeem the child. We work through it. But that is uncertain. It is uncertain if the child stays on the Reister's path. And so now we have a 50% chance of success and a 50% chance of failure. And finally, if we do nothing, at least according to some prophecies, this child who should not be will bring about absolute darkness and destruction, even though this is not the way it was, though it is not written in stone. Now, is the written in stone in the prophecy death or redemption? That is a flip of a coin. The other option is certain. If it was just the flipping of the coin, then I do believe that we have the emotional and conviction to go forward with what seems like the more just cause, and the more just cause is the child's survival. But because we have these prophecies that hint at absolute darkness, at nothing, and the flip of the coin, that has changed the risk. You as an alpha would be judged foolish, would you not, if there was a prophecy that said, if thou enters this building at the witching hour and the cock crows, and you are about on the cusp and you hear the cock crow, that you enter anyway, and the prophecy claimed that you would fall, that you would be labeled a poor alpha. Because of fate, the tangible realities, and the inescapable webs that the Weaver weaves and that the Wild seems to try and shift the best it can in these tumultuous times. But I agree that you have brought good points to me that I will have to think upon.
If I could speak one more thing on fate, then.
Speak?
Before I was Garu, before I knew I was Garu, there was not an inch of me that believed in fate. But now, of course, I know better. But we have no prophecies that I can think of that are set fully in stone. Even the prophecies that we were given were always clouded in if, should, when, could. The threads we've followed, the ones that have worked out, at least, for us, worked out for us because of the actions that we took, the actions that we chose. You're right that fate has marked this child. There can be no question. But there have also been no prophecies delivered to any of us that have spoken of surety. Minus, if you do nothing, this will happen. It's always in the something, the choices that we make, that those prophecies shift, that fate bends.
I hear you, and I admire your convictions. I do hope that you spread enough of a message, and I will have to think on what you said, but I do hope that you will think on what I said. You are free to use our moon bridge, though it does not go many places. We are a small set, but please stay the night. Recover yourselves. Your tongues hang from a long run, and I can smell the dirt of the road on you, even in my human skin.
Your kindness is unbelievably appreciated. Thank you.
As you all rest up, you'll have a bit of time to think about where you're going, but we will figure all that out next time. Thank you to everyone who listened. We'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.